space knows where that is in the kitchen with refreshments. For those who are joining us remotely, we want to encourage you to locate the chat. If you're a guest, we encourage you online to use the chat. If you have questions or comments, we can make sure to record those and include them in the meeting. And I don't believe we have any members joining us remotely today, so we don't need to worry about that. But we just want to remind everyone that the meeting is being recorded. So maybe we can just take a quick moment and go around the room and do a quick self-introduction. So again, I'm Katie Wilson. I'm with Consor. Correct?
Clark Worth, also with Consor, and I mentioned last time we just changed the name of the firm, was rebranded, and so you'll hear Barney and Worth, which is the name for 44 years or something. And so if you hear that or Consor, they both work on, so the same people, just different name.
I'm Rocky Houston. I'm with Clark County.
Hi everyone, Christine Perry, WCU Extension, County Truck Director.
I'm Jocelyn Falstick with Visit Vancouver, Washington.
I'm Sandy Brown with the Heritage Farm Advisory Group.
Hi, Eric Harrison with Clark County.
I'm Stanley Casabella Family Creek Business Association.
Bill Collins, Northeast Little Neighborhood Association.
Buckley, Vancouver Public Schools.
Marcela Venegas from Lulac of Southwest Washington.
Chris Meyer at the Parks Advisory Board.
I'm Tanika Sisko. My pronouns are she, her, hers, and I'm with NAACP.
Zora Oppenheimer, District Manager for Clark Conservation District.
Amy Arnold with Clark County.
Lindy Wallen, Clark County Parks Planner.
I'm back in the recording.
Hi, Zane Carver, I'm with Clark County.
Chantal Christina, she, her. I'm with 4-H, and just
Keith Scott, the other business.
Well, welcome everyone. Thank you for taking the time to weather the storm out there and join us today. So we're really excited to have you here. And
are there people online?
There are people watching online, yes.
Okay.
So we just want to take a quick moment to go over the agenda. As we went over, we did our self-introductions. We'll discuss today the current and proposed uses for the farm. And we'll go over preliminary results from the community survey that most of you probably received via email and hopefully participated in already. But if you haven't, please do. The economic framework. Then we'll go through a visioning exercise where we will work together to start a process to envision what we want the future of the farm to look like. We'll quickly talk about an upcoming public open house and next meeting, and then we'll have the rest of the day to enjoy this beautiful weather. We did introductions already. So next, I'll invite Sandra to discuss the current uses of the farm.
Okay. I think my name's Sandy. Yes, you mind standing up here? Oh, I'm sorry.
So you can be on camera.
I'm a movie star.
The handouts are at everybody's spot here.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm Sandy Brown, and I'm representing the Heritage Farm Advisory Group and substituting for Rob Freed as well. Lindy asked me to come and speak today a little bit about the current uses on the farm, and also maybe a brief review about what the advisory committee does, because it does affect the projects that are on the farm, and I'm not sure how much you're aware about how we interact with the projects on the farm. So basically, we consult with parks. The advisory committee consults with parks about projects and activities, policies, and procedures on the farm. It's been in existence since 2010 when the farm went over to the county. And we've transitioned through three departments over that time. So we started with general services, and then we moved to environmental health and public health, and then it moved to parks. So we like to think about us being kind of a historical tracker of all the information and all the changes that have been going on as we transition from one department to the next. So we've kind of kept track of all of that information and things that have happened as the farm projects increase on the farm. We facilitate conversations and advice around farm management projects and key decisions. Again, we try to involve ourselves in like the master plan work. We did some work around the historical preservation and maintenance plan that is out there. If you haven't seen that, that's a good document to look at as well. I'm not sure what all documents you have shared with the group. And like I said, the 2020 master plan. And we kind of take all that information and then give our recommendations to parks or whatever department we happen to be in at that time. But right now we present it to parks and then they make the decisions past that. So we're not making any final decisions about things that happen on the farm, but we're making what we feel like is educated recommendations based on surveys, conversations, et cetera. And then parks takes that from there. So one of the main things we do is we vet projects and programs that come to the farm. So currently there's 14 projects on the farm and you have a list of those projects and a brief summary of what their goals are here on the farm. From the food bank to a queen bee raising project to 4-H restorative community service, working with youth and teens. There's a wide variety of projects that happen here on the farm. And how those happen is there's an application form that the advisory committee asks the project to complete and they ask, what do you want to do? Do you have ideas of where you want to do it? Are you going to charge for it? What are you going to do? Are you going to sell produce? Are you going to give the produce away? How many people are going to be involved in your project? There's a whole variety of questions. I can't remember what they all are. But you turn those projects, that application into us, and then we vet that application against the guiding principles that are in the master plan. So there's a list of guiding principles right on the application that they need to follow. And so we vet those, like how well does this project meet those guiding principles and the historic nature of the farm? And then sometimes we have to ask them to come in and have a little interview because we have extended questions about, do they need parking? Do they need other assistance from the farm manager? Do they have equipment that they're going to bring on the farm? Do they need to use the county equipment or the WSU equipment? So we really dive into what their needs are and what is it they're going to do on the farm and how often are they going to be here? What are their resource needs? Do they need irrigation? Do they need to bring supplies in? Do they need a shed to store their things in? So we try to kind of think of the whole breadth of the influence of that project on the farm and what their needs are to be successful. So then we make a recommendation to parks that says, yes, we think this one should be a good project for the farm, but they want this location and we'd suggest that this would be a better location on the farm based on the soil available or the space needed, what they're next to, et cetera. So we make that recommendation and then parks takes it from there to say, yes, we're gonna do that. They need to have a lease. They work out the lease. We don't have anything more to do with that project at that point as far as where they go and how they function after that. Once the programs start on the farm, then we have what we call an event request, because many of the projects want to have events. They want to have a tour. They want to have a harvest dinner. They want to have a harvesting event where volunteers come onto the farm and harvest the produce. Lots of things that they might want to do on the farm, which nothing that they can't do here on the farm, but it's more from keeping track of, is there enough parking? Do they need to have additional bathrooms? Do we need hand washing facilities? Do they need tents and awnings? Do they need to have it a day before that? So trying to think about the impact on the farm and other projects and what else is going on the farm, because as you know, the Master Gardener's plant sale really takes up the whole farm on plant sale day. We can't have another event on that day. If you're going to have a huge harvest festival here, you can't have another event that day. So we just try to keep track of the events and what their needs are that day so that there's not a conflict of interest. So we ask for an event report. We say, okay, that sounds good. There's nothing else going. We send it to parks. They put it on their calendar and they know that it's existing. So we're kind of a keeper of that kind of information and on those strategies to try to help out what's going on the farm. The other thing we do is we do yearly summaries. So this is what we think one of the more important things is that we do is that I'm getting ready now to send out a survey to each of the project leads to ask them, what did they do this year? How much produce did they grow? How many volunteers came to the park or to the farm? How much produce did they grow? What's the value? We put a value on it. we get that value per pound from the ag services, so they have an average of how much per pound. So we might say in the grocery store they're charging $5.99 a pound for that, or the farmer is charging me $2.99 and I'm only putting $1.82, but that's an average that the Washington Ag gives us, so that's why we use that particular number. How many volunteers came to the farm? How many volunteer hours did they put in? And then the other thing is how much other funding comes to their project. Do they get cash donations? Do they get donations of seeds, plants? Do they get donations of farm equipment or shovels or a shed? Did they get cash donations just to make their work happen? Did they get a grant to do their work? So what other kind of funding that's not county funding comes to their project to make their project be successful? And you have a sheet in your handouts that outlines the, or summarizes the 2021 work. And if you look at that, it was $2 million that came into the farm last year. Yeah, oops, I guess, sorry. So when you think about that, that's a lot of extra either in-kind value or the value of the produce grown that's gone into the community, that went into people's hands that were food insecure, that couldn't afford to have the food, and they were able to have healthy food. And also then the outside funding that came to make the project possible, the equipment, the seeds, the volunteers that came in. And then with some of the projects, there are paid people, paid employees that work on those projects. So we have to include that, that finance that comes into it as well. Let me see. The other thing we've done in past years, we haven't done it, we did work with Eric and Rocky this year and had one project leads meeting, but we try to keep in communication with the project leads from each of those groups to find out what their needs are, to find out what are some issues on the farm. Are they having safety issues? Are they having issues in getting certain things done? Are they having trouble finding bark chips to put in the paths? Well, you're having trouble getting bark chips, but this person isn't, so they need to communicate. A lot of times the projects don't know what the other projects are doing or that they even exist. So it's a good time for them to get to know each other and support each other. I'm going to stop right there and see if you have any questions. There's so much I could be telling you that.
I love your financial breakdown. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I kind of wonder how some of these little organizations or tasks manage to avoid giving us a report since 2019. Is there nothing in your agreement with them that says they have to report? Because that's...
Some of them didn't exist then. Like the weather station. I mean, the weather station has existed for 100 years, yes. But they weren't doing anything. But this year they did. So that's why they didn't report.
Sandy, if I may, in our leases, it actually says if the county asks, they shall provide. So we're changing that in new leases to where there'll be quarterly updates automatic to be coming in instead of it being a passive where we have to ask. And so that way it makes... Well, this collection easier to look at that.
Would it be just as simple to make that part of any lease?
That's exactly what I just said.
Yeah. It just seems like going forward, that has to be something if we're going to be responsible for sustainability, easily for me to say, for the farm, then you really do need to know where they're coming from. This is wonderful material.
Yeah, and it was just a start. We started this about 4 years ago. I do have a comparison sheet for the last 3 years, if anybody's interested. I just gave you the 2021 so you can see how it's changed and also what it looked like through COVID, because that's still a different picture as well. But we didn't expect it to be any deep dive particularly, but we were just interested in knowing what are the impacts to the community, because there's some far-reaching impacts into the community that happen here on the farm, and we don't realize that. And we also don't realize when the county was asking about the value for their dollar is that the amount of money that they put into maintaining the farm, and I hear we'll hear some more today as well, but the input from the community in a whole variety of ways far outweighs that amount of money that comes in. So we thought we needed to be realistic about how much it costs to run the projects here. It's just not one figure that we keep hearing about all the time. So it's not a deep, as deep a dive as it could be, but we really felt like it was a good start. Yeah. And if anybody's interested in looking at the specific reports that the people give us, I can share those at some point, but I just try to summarize some of their main points, which is on their Heritage Farm Impact Statement report. I try to just keep it to one page, but it kind of highlights some of the main things that happen on the projects. So like I said, I'm getting ready to do the 2022 one. I'll be sending that one out, and hopefully I'll be able to produce that about February if everybody gets their things in the first of January. Right.
On the program identified, do every one of these partners have something out on the ag land or some of that here in this building as well?
They all have something out on the ag land. Even though Extension does have other programs that reside in this office that then go to the schools or go to other locations, each of those programs do have something that happens here on the farm. So 4-H, for example, has the 4-H RCS garden. SnapBed has some farm-to-school tours and things that happen here on the farm.
I think so. Sandra did not create that document that says farm user groups at the top. She did review it, but the I think it discusses extension programs on there, and some of those don't utilize any site farm sites. They're administratively run out of this building.
Okay.
But like I said, I do believe, and Christine, you could correct me if I'm wrong, each of the programs does have something that happens here on the farm, even though there's many things that happen off the farm.
I would say not all, every extension program, no, I would say, but yes, I would say like 3 or 4.
Yeah, so thanks. So there had been a lot of interest in the last meeting in understanding more about what's going on at the farm now, and so that's why you got Sandy to come and talk. But the other part of this is at the public open house that's scheduled for December. We've asked pretty much every group on there to come and set up a little easel or have some pamphlets and be available for you and the folks that would be the public that's attending to walk around and ask questions of them to get to know a little bit more about what they're doing if you have any specific questions.
Yes.
I have a random question. How many parking spots do you have for the farm?
I wouldn't know that.
Okay.
And that depends on, I mean, there's the ones that are in the paved area, and then when there's a plant sale or something else, then there's the field that people park in. And then there's a few handicapped spots that are on the farm near the community plots. So either Rocky or someone else would.
So the priority parking is going to be parking right here. The west is going to be second priority. And then if we have any events, that is all coordinated to park, drop off, product at the greenhouses, and then find additional parking in those adjacent areas.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, thank you.
And that's why the advisory committee is interested in the event request, because then we can see what their parking needs are, and then we can pass that along to parks or someone to say, this event looks okay, but you're going to have to coordinate with them about how they're going to deal with parking if they expect to have 300 people come to their events.
So, and to clarify, we have mobility enhancement parking areas, not ADA stalls out on the farm. So they don't meet the letter of the law being paved and flat and having striped lines and that stuff. So I know I'm threading the needle there. I apologize. It's just when the term ADA comes out, then there's a different level we have to hit versus just having, if someone has that mobility issues, we provide an opportunity where they can drive out there to get closer.
Other
questions? Thank you, Sandy. Okay. Next, we might want me to speak about the farm expense.
Yeah, the cord. All right, so last meeting, there was a lot of questions in regards to what is the farm cost unit, how is that broken down? And so we're trying to show this. We're still continuing to revise and update. As you see, this is only through September 2021. We're trying to provide a five-year snapshot. So this is 4 years and 3 quarters. And the other thing is that when we pull the numbers, there's the farm, and that means something to some people. There's extension services, and then there's farm operations. And so to try to show the differences, the dark green here are all those costs that are in kind or direct payments to WSU in regards to extension services. The lighter green is things associated with our farm specialist and actually our labor. We're primarily out helping manage the farm acreage out there. And so over the last 5 years, roughly, we spent about $4.2 million, $4.1 million. And you can kind of see that breakdown. So most of that money is going towards extension services due to the allocation and the in-kind. This admin building has a much higher cost per square foot than our farm operations as such. That is factored in here. This is coming from what our facilities, our parks, several different groups are putting in here. Another thing to identify is that we've got a capital. So we had two capital projects out here in the last 5 years. One was that West parking lot that serves the admin building, meets those standards. And so that cost is attributed to this building. The $290,000 is associated with an irrigation project we had out there. And so again, as we went through here, we went through and identified the county staff that's here square footage wise and trying to break down all those costs. In the past, I don't know if it's still the same level, the county provides computers and the IT and the network and all that stuff for extension services as well. So that's why that cost is higher than, you know, you would think initially, but you can kind of see how that has broken down. So about $720,000 a year, about $551,000 of that is towards in-kind donation on or the allocation for extension services, and about $170,000 for farm operations. And I think last year our budget was about $135,000 for the farm operations side in regards to that. It's $308,000 for the allocation. Is that 306? Does that sound right, Christine-ish?
As far as 310.
310. And then the difference there is the additional. Another comment last meeting is why are you treating the farm differently than the other properties? And that's not true. We go through the same sort of process of looking at cost recovery and where our costs are on everything. It's just sort of a part of government business is we're looking at all assets. And to show a comparison in our PROS plan, so the Parks, Recreation, and Open Space plan that's done every 6 years, we had an analysis of Luke Jensen. It's just down the street looking at our annual cost expenses is about $453,000. Our revenue coming in from rental fees is about $155,000. So we got about 34% cost recovery. I'm tasked with how to make that recovery better because we never have enough money to do all the things that we want to do. You know, so we're looking at FTE models, looking at other things to provide the same level of service or as close as we can, but again, get that cost recovery a little higher. And I don't have the exact number, but looking again here at the farm, it's sort of the same thing we're looking at doing is looking at of our cost of $709,000 a year, what are we bringing in to offset those general funds? And right now it's, you know, it's about 3%, about 20,000. That number is just a sort of a quick back of the napkin look. And again, that's part of this look is we're not hitting 100% recovery down the street. We're not asking to do that here, but we're all sharpening our pencils and trying to come up with what are the some strategies that we could to help reduce that, what's that fund called? General fund support for the facility. Any questions?
I'm sorry, is the green the same as the green and the dark blue the same as the, are those flipped?
Yes, this and that are the same.
So the dark
blue. Light green and this. Yeah, I had an issue when I was trying to do the same exact data. It was, and then I switched it and it wouldn't show it right. So.
Okay, so those, okay.
Colors are wrong, inverted.
Okay, that's okay. But thank you for clarifying.
I got to a point where I couldn't figure out Excel and why it was transferring stuff to where it wasn't showing right. That this was changing it to a pie chart made it work.
No, that's totally fine. From visually, it wasn't clear, so I just wanted to make sure.
The point is that there's not much cost recovery on the Heritage Farm side, there's more cost recovery at Luke Jensen.
And it's still, most of it's coming from dedicated funds, which is the Greater Clark Park District Fund, which, as you guys all voted back in 2005 for, if you're within the boundary, to have a levy to help support the Luke Jensen property and other parks in the Greater Clark Park District. It's about four.
You get the same sort of cost or benefit from all your rest of your parks in the county?
No, we don't.
Why not?
Well, because we don't charge fees at a neighborhood park. And then at a regional park, we have a general fund model. We charge parking, and we have rental fees, and we have special event fees and other fees. So each property is unique, but the idea is to continue to manage our costs and look at those revenue streams. With Luke Jensen and many of our Greater Clark Park districts, we have dedicated funding through a tax base that is directed for that, which allows us to have more of those opportunities out there.
I have another question.
Yeah.
Somebody else done on the slide before.
You're back.
I need to go back to this. So is everything on their cash, or are there any volunteer?
No volunteer. That's okay. Cash.
And is all of that cash from Clark County, or is that a mix of cash from different organizations?
General fund.
Okay, that all of that is general fund. So there's other costs and expenses to the Heritage Farm outside of that aren't captured. This is just what it costs the county. That right?
Different users would have costs for the work that they perform. Is that what you're meaning?
Yeah, I mean, like, presumably Extension gets grants, or other organizations that are on here get other grants to do work that they do here on the farm, or outside.
Yeah, there are other revenues that are coming in stream, and I think Extension Services is a good example. I think in the previous one of those things, there was like $1.19 million, you know, and part of that portion of that, some of those are federal funds, some of those are grants. I think there was $118,000 referenced there for an ag research. Is that a mushroom? I know there's money. Justin does basically for mushrooms and other things, and so you're right, there are those things that help offset those costs, but those are, we have leases with those groups, and so those aren't a county expense. Those are related to that. What we are providing is a low cost, almost in some places low cost lease for them to have the opportunity to do some of those things.
There's a very nice presentation that WSU Extension gave to the county council, I think earlier this year, at the end of last year.
Yeah,
it's like 20 minutes long or so it's too long to have here, but they talk about the funding sources and whatnot specific to Extension Services, and I can share that with all of you if you'd like to watch that.
Last October, I think, maybe? Seems about right.
Yeah.
So
I'll be sure to send that to you after the meeting if you want to review it. It's got a nice PowerPoint. All the colors line up.
Thank you.
Actually, I just have one more question about that. So, you know, as far as the cost, I think to also be clear is that the expenses, so all extensions, as we may have talked about, is, you know, that the county has an RCW, which is that they have the right to have an extension. So there's an extension in every single county in the state, right? And the county has the ability or the right to be able to have an extension, right? And so part of that too is just to be clear, is that so this extension or the extension office can be housed anywhere, right? So that's, again, that expense. So that's where it kind of gets a little bit confusing too, in the sense of, yes, that we are one of the main tenants here and that we are a cost, but we also, for I don't know how many years, 20 years, you know, we were at the Casey Center, right? Before 2008, we were housed there. The county housed us in that area. So again, just to be clear, yes, it does cost money, right? But just to be clear that the extension is housed here for, you know, that
at that time, at when the negotiation was for the farm to be no longer a research station, that's when the county or the extension was then housed here, right? But before that, they were housed somewhere else, right? And the county, that we've always had that partnership, and the county was funding us somewhere else.
That's part of the county agreement with WSU, is that their portion of the partnership is to house them and give them equipment and computer services and things like that. So whether you're at the Casey Center or on T Street or like a monkey head.
Which it's not, to be clear. It's just when it's lumped all in with the cost of the Heritage Farm, I feel like it just does it all a disservice. So anything that we can do to tease out those things in what you give us, I think we'd be able to give us both, give us all the information, but don't lump it.
Yeah, and I think to be fair on this, the next slide, the pie chart should have been the $168,000. Because really that's the thing that we have to try to think about from business practice, is that the extension service cost is a cost that we don't have, that's not part of this group's mission. It's not our focus is to talk about, you know, do we give them $2 billion or $12? You know, it's really is this what the business practices, the use of the property and how that is. So
thank you. So moving on, we have to stick with our tight agenda. David Stipe is going to
So David is online.
Okay.
We are not on sure-footed ground here because we haven't had someone online speak, so we're going to do our best. So I ask that the folks in here, if you could not speak while David is speaking, and then we'll work out questions with you. But I'm sorry, we are not technologically
advanced. Can everyone hear me? This is David.
We can hear you.
I will.
Okay, can we try
now? Really bad echo on my end. If you shut off your microphones on that end.
There you go.
All right.
We can hear you now.
Okay, great. Thank you. I apologize for not being there in person. Had a last minute family issue crop up. I work with Lindy in the planning and development section, and she asked me to provide you with a brief history and planned improvements for Heritage Farm that are based on the master plan. We talked a little bit about this at the last meeting, but real quickly as a reminder that the 2019 master plan, 2020 master plan is a revision of the original master plan from 2010. The plan revision began in early 2019 and was not adopted until February of 2020. There were two community meetings. There were four Heritage Farm Advisory Team meetings to discuss the plan revision. The plan revision went to the Planning Commission for a hearing and was recommended for adoption. And we had two separate work sessions with the council to talk about the revisions to the plan. And then that plan was adopted, like I said, in February of 2020. So the plans are not that much different. If you can turn to the next slide. This is the 2010 master plan. And again, there's not a whole lot of difference between the 2010 and the 2020 plan. Some of the notable changes when we pull up the 2020 plan is the trail alignment is more of a perimeter trail to maintain flexibility in farm operations across the site to the north between the farm fields and the admin building. The wetland is in this plan in the dark green color that continues through in the 2020 plan. That community learning center down to the south was eliminated because we built the meeting room at Luke Jensen and considered that community resource. So felt like we could eliminate that from this plan. That freed up in the 2020 plan the opportunity to expand Hazeldale Park. And then if you look at the northeast corner, there's a multi-use building that continues in the next plan. And so we'll just switch over to the next plan at this point. Next slide, please. This should say 2020 master plan. It's a typo. That's my fault. I apologize. Some of the plan highlights, and the reason that we're talking about this today is because these things are in our capital improvement plan for 2023 to 2028. A multi-use trail, which is the heavy white line that goes around the perimeter of the farm fields. Some of that work will need to be vetted in preliminary design to make sure that we meet trail design criteria. So some of the straight up and down trails won't meet criteria, and so we'll need to make some minor modifications there. We are working with our Clean Water Division on a wetland enhancement project in the wetland area on Cougar Creek, and the plan for public access improvements has arisen out of that conversation, and that's why in 2022 capital improvement plan there wasn't any money in the budget for public access improvements at Heritage Farm, and then in 23 there we did add it in. That wetland project will be constructed in 2025, and then we anticipate developing a portion of the multi-use trail, hopefully a boardwalk through the wetlands, so a third crossing of Cougar Creek further to the east. And hopefully we can afford, in the money that we've budgeted, a connection to Hazeldale Park and one or two multi-use buildings, one of them hopefully being we can afford a restroom facility. And then anywhere we can capitalize on the story of Heritage Farm, the story of the wetland improvement, will have some interpretive areas and perhaps a little outdoor seating area that we would sort of initially call an outdoor classroom. So that's pretty much the update that I have for the master plan. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Rocky's obviously there in person. He'd probably be better able to answer them if I can't.
Any questions?
I have a question about the processes that these will go through as far as through the historic preservation route to make sure it follows the historic plan and maintenance plan that was done back in 2018.
So Sandy, is that specific to the master plan and any development in the master
development plan? Pieces, yes.
Okay. So yeah, we would go through our permitting processes for any development. So we would go to community development and have them a preliminary and follow the process they
prescribed.
So then it would go through the preservation committee as well. Does that?
Yes. That project development, or the permitting review.
Yeah, like, you know, the buildings and things like that, because there's a plan about the current buildings and what they can be used for. And then if there's any new buildings or new structures, there was always historic preservation needs to kind of put their stamp of approval that it fits the historic designation of the property.
Can't be the same, but looks similar. Right. I've had to do like on historic Columbia River Highway where we're putting a guardrail and we couldn't have a white. Well, it could be the same, it just it had to be brown so that because it was new. So it seems things like that. So yeah, we would be following depending upon what the work is. It might require a different process to engage with for historic preservation or historic review.
And that's one thing that I failed to mention, but it goes along with this. It says projects come to the farm is how do they fit into the historic designation of the property? And was it something that fits into that venue as well? So I'm kind of filling in for Rob's historic preservation question as well, because I know he'd have that.
I think in a different meeting, we've had questions about the federal review because of the historic designation. And that wouldn't promote, did some research on the wetlands project, and that wouldn't necessarily be required unless there's federal funding for a structure that's built out.
And I assume that all of you have seen the preservation and maintenance plan.
We shared it with the group. To look at it.
Because the Metro Center report said that they didn't have a copy of it, and so I wasn't sure if that was kind of lost in transition.
You have the Metro Center report. So.
Yeah. Anything else?
Thank you, David.
My pleasure. Sorry again for not being there in person.
All right, moving on to talk about the community survey. You received this via email a couple times probably by now. And we have now, we said when we created this report, we said there was 191 participants, but we checked this morning and we are up to close to 240. And so we sent this to the interested parties list. The results show that mostly the survey participants are also folks who are actively participating in the farm so far, but we are also working with the county to get it out on social media to see if there's any other general public interest in providing feedback about what's going on here at the farm. And so we're just going to briefly talk to you about some preliminary results, and we'll have a summary of the results at the December 14th open house that's a little bit more involved. So some highlights from the survey that we just wanted to share briefly was that about 70% of the responses came from folks who are participating currently in Extension Services, which is great, and 50% from volunteering opportunities, and 30% are participating in leased or incubator farms. So we asked a few questions about priorities for the future. 80% wanted the farm to continue to operate on tax dollars. 73% wanted more outdoor classroom and shelter facilities. 70% of responses said they wanted to host a farmer's market here on site. And also 54% also wanted to hold more public events. And those questions were around how do we engage more people, get more people involved here at the farm and increase public participation.
What does tax dollars mean? I'm like, you know, every color of money means something different to me.
Go ahead. I didn't interrupt you.
No, I just.
The question was about how should we pay the bills here at the Heritage Farm? And so trying to keep the information basic so that, you know, not everyone is well versed in public finance. We described it as tax dollars or general fund dollars.
Okay, so thank you. Because general fund dollars are tax dollars.
Yes.
So that's, you've answered my question.
Okay.
And one of the things that I noticed asking my community is that most people, well, I should say all the people that I talk to, they don't know about the Heritage Farm. So that I think one of the things that we can do is, you know, let more people know about it. Because that way people will want to come and they have more events in it as well, because that's one of the things a lot of people doesn't even, you know, you ask them, do you know that, you know, about Heritage Farm? They're like, no, I did not. And so they, would you be interested in, you know, participating or, you know, having events there? They're like, yes, absolutely. But I mean, they don't know about it. That's the main issue thing. So we need to work on that, because.
And we heard that in the survey too. If you go to the next slide, we pulled out a few common themes and survey comments from survey participants. And one of the top themes we saw was to increase community awareness of the farm. That they, most folks agree with you that the community is not necessarily aware of what the farm is here to do and what's available here at the farm. Another common theme was to honor the history of the farm, to preserve the open space that's here. And we had a lot of comments that there needs to be more community garden plots. But it seems like the folks that are coming here are really enjoying their time here. The comments were really thoughtful. Heritage Farm is a treasure with much potential for the future, and we need to protect it and use it wisely. And that was echoed throughout the survey responses, that folks really value the space here, the history of it, and what's going on here currently, and want to see preservation of that history and the ongoing farming education that's happening here. So again, we will continue to collect results up through the open house and continue to report back, and we'll put together a summary to finalize all of the results from the survey and share that with you. Our goal is for these survey results to help inform you what community members are saying about the farm. So as you're talking about future topics at future meetings, you can keep that in mind and as you're planning for the future of Heritage Farm.
I also say, we would like to ask you, if we haven't been forward enough, to please forward it to all of the people that you're representing, so that they have a chance to participate in it if they haven't received it already. And then also, if you know of different groups of folks that maybe it's not appropriate for you to send them to, but maybe it is for us, if you would please just email me with the name of that group or the contact person. I've sent it to like 15 different advisory groups, or, you know, different groups that in my mind in the community, not just, you know, agricultural groups that I think could benefit from participating as well. So please communicate that to me, and I'm happy to send it out.
May I ask a question before you go away from this part? Because there's an item here about more community garden plots. Is there a waiting list for them? Are we not able to provide enough? And if so, how many people are sitting there waiting each year? Do we know that?
There is a waiting list. Yeah.
Is it
we've increased? There's probably, I would say, no more than a dozen. We've increased our plots every couple of years. We have now 88 plots. So, I mean, the potential is there. We currently only have a 6 hour a week person overseeing it. So definitely, I mean, that would be something that we could increase. Yeah, the cost is $75 a year. So it's not a big, so that the person that we pay is not sustainable on that amount. Yeah.
So adding another dozen people or so at $75 a year is not going to pay for the extra time.
Yeah.
It's going to take. And is it that a paid employee is required to oversee? We couldn't have a volunteer corps of.
You could absolutely. That could be a consideration. Currently, it is a paid employee.
The neighborhood associations wrapped around, I'm sure.
I'm not sure what other models are, like what the other city community parks or community gardens are, of what that model looks like. I think it is either a parks or a city employee who oversees it.
So we have one in Pacific Park over on the east side of town, and that's a nonprofit volunteer organization. We give the property.
Yeah.
And we pick up a dumpster every once in a while. Yeah. Actually, yeah. I don't even know if we do. We just keep it there. Yeah. But
so is that something, Rocky, that would be worth pursuing at NAC or something? Neighborhood Association Council, Kirk Hunt.
Potentially, you know, I think really we have a representative from the neighborhood association here locally, so that'd probably be the first.
Those that has come up in discussions in meetings of the neighborhood association, which unfortunately we haven't met in 2 years, but you know, helping people out with those plots. But
then we have a group here
that actually
do master gardening.
We're going to have to move on to the next agenda item, so we'll have enough time for the visioning exercise. So one of the things that we have done, we wanted to make sure that you had some awareness of before we have the visioning exercise, to talk about the economic framework for decisions. And to some extent, Rocky's covered the kind of the current financial picture, but we also wanted to talk about different potential futures. We have actually two economists on the team. One of the economists is looking at, if we go all in agriculture here, is there a way to accomplish the goals of the county council, which is increase public activity here, increase public access, and the other goal of financial sustainability. So again, all in agriculture, how would that look? What would it happen? And then the other economists looked at what happens if we redevelop all or a portion of the site. And that discussion, there was some discussion at the first advisory committee meeting or steering committee meeting last time. The first question, the agricultural economist, and this is a firm called GlobalWise, local Clark County firm, been in business for 40 years. And first thing that they concluded is that this site is great for agriculture. You know, this, why has farming happened here for 150 years? Because it works on this site. The soils are high quality soils. It's called Pillsboro loam, most of it, for those of you who are soil scientists. There's water on the site. So there's an operating well. There's adequate, with the expansion of the current system, adequate water to irrigate the site. And most types of agriculture these days require water. You know, there are dry land farmers, probably not going to work at this particular site. And there's a lot of agricultural infrastructure that's already here. You got farm roads, you have a perimeter fence, you have agricultural buildings and equipment. And a lot of the buildings here, some agricultural buildings are specific to one type of crop. Think of a silo that you put grain in. Most of the agriculture buildings here are very flexible. You know, you could adapt them. And if you think about the history of the site, well, it's been used to grow all kinds of things here. So the buildings are kind of general, the facilities are, the equipment can be used, that is here could be used for other things. You see the pile of wheelbarrows there, you know, those get used by multiple users of the site. And again, refer back, I didn't have any picture in my mind about all the things that are happening here, but if you refer back to that handout and the 14 plus users of the site, you get an idea of the array of things that are happening here. The drawbacks of the site, again, great for farming, farm into the future, you know, a lot of crops were. The drawbacks here, one of it is that a lot of the site hasn't been used or hasn't been used in a long time. And what that means to agricultural people is it can have pests, it can have weeds that are really difficult to get rid of. And so some attention would have to be paid. If you're going to farm more of the site, some attention will likely have to be paid. The usual thing are chemicals, but there are other things farmers can do besides chemicals to minimize the problems with weeds and pests. There may be some areas of clay soils that need amendment. I mentioned most of the soils here are good, but there probably are some spots of clay soils, and we haven't gone around and tested it, but based on the information that the agricultural economist had. And a bigger issue is the steep hillside. That is an issue for farming. You know, any hillside can be farmed. You know, if you think of those pictures you've seen, or maybe you visited Asia and you see terraced farming. But most of the types of farming, it's an issue here because the cost of it, because we're running equipment, the safety of the farm operators, and every erosion is an issue. So every crop can't be farmed on a steep hillside. Even if you look out here and you see that hillside from a farming standpoint is considered to be a steep hillside that you have to be take consideration of. Another issue is for crops here, for specialized crops that you might need specialized investment. You know, there might have to be some investment that goes along with that. Also, you're in an urban area here, so you're surrounded by other uses, including residential uses. There's some types of farming that don't blend very well with in a residential neighborhood or next to a residential neighborhood. So it's not an easy place to run our tractors down the road here. You know, if we take a tractor out of the 78, you know, it's not going to work very well with the neighborhood. And then finally, the public trails, the public trails can create conflicts. Most farming in general doesn't get along with public access. So if you read the news stories, a lot of farming, when they put in some of these trail projects out in rural areas, farmers generally speaking don't like it because they're worried about having damage to the crops. They're worried about safety issues with people getting access to their farmland, et cetera. So that issue comes up. Crops, we asked about crops that could work especially well here. 79 acres, multiple use, but what crops are we, again, accomplishing the goals that we're looking at of more public access and financial sustainability. One of the crops that leaps out is wine grapes. You know, that is a crop that makes money. You know, if you, in agriculture generally, if you can smoke it or you can drink it, it can make money. Yeah. Most other crops are a little bit more challenging, the financial return on them. Other ideas behind the wine grapes are indigenous foods, berries, native plants. There's growing interest in those as part of the food system, and then any number of specialty crops. And a lot of the research that's gone on this site already has been focused on specialty crops. You know, what things that farmers can make money at and fairly small plantings can use to create some cash. Crops to avoid, and it's simple, it's really two categories: commodity crops. Those are the land intensive big things like grains, soybeans, cotton, etc. That take a lot of their land intensive, the kinds of things that have to happen out someplace where farmland is cheap. They don't happen in urban areas. And they're generally speaking low value crops, not the kind of thing that it's easy to make money at unless you have 100,000 acres. And then livestock, because livestock also doesn't work well in an urban area. Takes a lot of land, has impacts, odors, for example, that might be detrimental to neighbors. So that's the, in terms of the agricultural picture, great place for farming into the future, and some idea from our economists about things that, you know, thumbs up, other things that might be thumbs down, terms of crops. Now, the other question, and this came up last time, what happens if the site's redeveloped? What's the site worth? And what would happen if the county decided to redevelop the site? And so the answer to the question about what the site is worth is a range, and it's a big range of $20 to $40 million. And the range is there for a few reasons, but the main reason is we don't know what infrastructure might be required, you know, so, or who would pay for it. So if the developer has to take that into consideration, might discount the price, but the per acre price there is about $250,000 to $500,000 an acre. That explains why it's such a wide range, not to mention the volatility of the market for real estate. It's quite an attractive site. I mean, if you think about it, very close to the center of town, a big site, easily redevelopable, you know, kind of like a greenfield. Like what they call a greenfield site. The highest and best use, and by that, it's not a recommendation of any kind. It's just if we made it available, if the county made this available, the likely use would be residential development. That would be most likely. Other prospects that have been identified, commercial, but not, probably not for the whole site, just a portion of the site that's along 78, potentially a business park or a mega church. Would all be possible users of the site. There are a bunch of issues associated with redevelopment, besides, of course, its historic use and farming. And that includes, I mentioned the infrastructure already, access constraints, you know, where would access points be for the site? If you had a residential development, for example, what would the, how would you get access to the site? Just compatibility of the uses and community acceptance. They're also, because it's been in farming, potentially there'd be some environmental issues. You know, there would have to be inspections of the site, testing of the site for chemicals, et cetera. Although a lot of what's happened out here has been organic farming or something close to that. For financial sustainability, the issues that our economist, and this economist is Edie Hovey and Company again, long time economist based in Clark County. Basically, the thing that he suggests thinking about is who is this? Who's going to develop this? And what is their financial wherewithal? Is this a group? And whether it's a nonprofit group or a private developer, you know, is this somebody with deep pockets? You know, with the capital that really is required to invest in this, and considering that as being very important, the amount of capital that would have to be spent here in terms of thinking about financial sustainability depends in part on how much you have to spend up front. So if you have to spend a lot up front, then, you know, it's harder to find a way to pay that back. And then the other thing is just could those costs be shared in some way? If you had multiple development potential, is there a sharing of the cost that's possible with that? With that, we're going to move on to the visioning exercise. And I want to say with the visioning exercise, you have in your packet of papers there, I think in my packet, it's the last sheet. There is a worksheet there. And what with three questions on it, what we'd like you to do is take a few minutes, just a few, to answer, jot down some notes, answer any questions before we start the discussion. So maybe I'll say 3 minutes or something. So don't write a treatise here, but do look at each of the questions and jot some notes down before Katie starts the discussion.
Values are based on farmland. The values are based on
farmland. It's not based on it's based on redevelopment, but it's
don't change.
It assumes that it's redeveloped.
You rezoned.
Pardon?
You have to do rezoned.
Just one more minute.
Is anything missing there today? What do you, what is there anything missing in the current farm site that you think should be here?
Oh, okay.
Right. I know a lot of you are still working, but we do need to keep moving just to stay on task. So the first question in our visioning exercise is, what phrase best captures your vision for the future of the Heritage Farm site? I'm going to ask if there's anyone brave to pick us up to share. Let's try to be a little concise just so we can make sure everyone has an opportunity to share and speak and participate, and we'll move fairly quickly through these questions. Yes, Teresa, I have
a place where people can learn about farming history and the environment.
Love that. Love that. Who else?
Lines along the same lines a little bit, but a place to teach, learn, or teach, and provide sustainable food access.
Great. Yeah.
We have a food system hub that supports keeping a strong, sustainable food system for our county.
So you want this to be a hub where folks come to talk about food systems?
You can get research, services, education, for all different kinds of food system partners.
Great.
I had about the same idea what she was thinking, and I think, you know, farm, what you know, farmers and people that are interested in farming can come and learn how, you know, the basic of farming and how to do things, and
that's great. So you want to encourage new folks to come into the agricultural world?
Yeah.
Yes, Bill.
For educational site, both historically and alternative lifestyle projects, urban farming, things along those lines.
Could you talk a little bit about what you mean, urban farming, alternative lifestyle?
Well, small-scale farming in the urban area. I can use my own yard or place as an example. I keep chickens. I have a small orchard. I have I do organic gardening in my yard on a small scale. And I think that an educational project on this site to teach people how to do that, to become more independent, is a worthwhile project for this site.
Working demonstration and teaching / learning farm with available but limited public access opportunities.
I wrote community gathering, collective community care, and access.
Great. So you're really thinking about the impact of food source and food stability for the community.
I was thinking a lot of sustainability, putting the youth in there. So my statement was partnership with youth to educate healthy living and sustainable land use.
Right. So moving on, is there any, so what's missing here today to help you get to your vision? Yes.
I put things to, things for the public to do regularly, to engage in, like classes regularly, events, maybe tour, guided tours that are educational, stuff like that for people to come and engage instead of just coming randomly when there's the master gardeners, you know, but something more like every Tuesday and Thursday, there's this going on.
Public awareness. I agree. I've been here 9 years, didn't know what this was.
Okay.
And I also put down that the look and the feel of the place. I mean, it doesn't really look historical. You know, so I think some of the ideas that we had in one of our readings was, you know, how the kind of fences we have, and just that it looks like kind of what you wanted to feel like, that it feels historic.
So be thoughtful with the aesthetics. Yes.
Having something on a regular basis, like, I don't know if a farmer's market is the answer, but something like that where people know on this day and time it's open, maybe there's like associated tours that can go on at the same time. It's like you come and get your food and then you get a tour, because there are concerns about it being open to the public all of the time with any kind of working farm. Sure. Beyond just you know, someone doesn't want someone, I don't know, messing with their crops. It's more complicated than that. So having more regular opportunities for people to come who maybe aren't attracted by something like the more specific offerings that are here. They're very like informative and important, but maybe don't attract everybody.
I was thinking the next step, so you grow, you harvest, then what? So cooking classes, or what do you do with what you harvested? How do you prepare food in a healthy, sustainable way?
And it happens. One of the things that happened in about 2008-09 when the community was aware of the county's willingness to give up this piece of gold out here was that they did suggest, as Dora said, that the whole concept of a farmer's market, and what was proposed at that point and drawn out was, if I can just go straight from the building straight east, they suggested sort of a long extension thing, almost like a strip mall, only kind of each little sales unit would be rented to either an outside farmer, a vendor, which we've got a lot of them around, they could grow. And we also wanted to put like a winery up at the top, you know, so it would access from 68th Street, but the vines you could see growing down the hill because they do that. And terrace farming has worked all over Europe for a very, very long time. I think we could figure it out. But the concept of just renting out the spaces, then you'd have, the way we had it figured out, I think we had 10 20 by 20 sections, and then vendors could come in, and it could either be farmers that grew something on the property, but because we thought that was limited, then we would have reached out to area farmers, much like some of the local farmers markets do. We have to do something because the county is greedy and they will take it away. And the biggest impediment to that is that people don't know. They just don't know what it is. They don't know why it's here, how long it's been here. And we have a lot of places in Clark County we can build houses. But this place is unique and there are no others on this side of the Mississippi.
We talk a lot about the farming aspect and all that, but I think one of the things we're really missing out on is the historical value of this site. I don't think anybody here can
go down.
But that's not really what it is, right?
Sorry, I'm going to have to look at something very bad.
It's always you.
I know.
You didn't leave your dog locked in the car to do something much.
No. But what I'm seeing from the numbers you put together, $170,000 a year. That's not, I mean, we can.
You can fundraise. That was a high space.
Right. Like, that does not seem like enough. Like, yeah, I want to have all these access things. We should talk about this. But also, some smart people can fundraise $170,000 a year like that. Like, why is this so hard?
Part of it is that typically you don't give to the so the county has its budget, so you don't give to Clark County to provide something that some people may assume is why I'm paying taxes, and that's what. So
Christine, what about university students doing this as part of one of their programs? You've got have to have ag programs. I know you do in Poland. I don't know what you've got here, but is there any potential at that in exploring that?
Well, I mean, we have interns come and work for us on all different kinds of capacities all the time. Yeah.
And with interns, a lot of times it's for a term. It's very well defined in regards to the things that they are doing. So again, it's kind of like volunteers, but they are definitely added value for a lot of reasons.
So we've kind of shifted down to number three. I just want to make sure before we move on that there's not anything else even would you like to share about something specific that's missing that we should be reporting for
future. One thing we neglected to say, for some of you arrived later, there are refreshments in the other room. There's coffee and some sweets back there. If you feel free to get up, go get them.
I'm just wondering if we could talk, and I don't want to put Sandy on the spot, but as far as the, there is a foundation for the farm that is in place. So I don't know if we're talking about like raising funds of being able to lift up that foundation and being able to support that foundation. Because there is a foundation in place for the farm.
Mm-hmm. I spoke with Blair Wolfley briefly, and there's some information about the foundation on the user group handout. And he had expressed frustration is the right word, but they feel like they don't know where they're going. And so it's hard to fundraise when you don't know exactly what it's going to look like, what you're raising.
I think one of the things with the foundation is that, you know, they have some ideas, but if you don't know where the farm's going and do your ideas align with what those are. So I think right now they're trying to, we're trying to identify areas like is supporting equipment repairs is a good example. So the equipment, when it breaks down, needs to be repaired, and the county's not going to support the WSU equipment. So can we have little pots or little projects, the farm, the fork tours, to try to get more kids to the farm and supporting that kind of thing? So are those places where people are willing to donate? Because as Rocky had said, a lot of people don't want to donate to the county. Does it go into a black hole, and where does it go? And so if there are some real projects that align with what's going on in the farm, the Heritage Farm Foundation would do some marketing that way and try to raise funds for those kinds of activities. There's also a membership where people can become members, either yearly members or lifetime members. So we do have a membership drive as well. So that'll be at the open house. But I think that's when Blair says there's a frustration. I think it's, you know, as we start looking at ways to raise money for the farm, what is it going to be used for? Because any of you that are going to donate, you're going to like, what are you going to do with my money? You know, and so we have projects that align with that. So that's where it's kind of, we're in a stumbling block a little bit, but very passionate people on the foundation to wanting to help fund projects and help keep things going.
Their website, I went to their website last night, and they talked about an endowment.
Mm-hmm.
It's in process.
It's in process.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, so, and that website's being revised a little bit as well, so.
Good, because it's fiddly.
It is fiddly, yes.
Well, but it still has information.
It has membership form and the donation form on it, so.
Do we know if they're 501(c)(3) or?
They are.
They will be.
They didn't say anything on their website about that.
They are, and they will be at the, they'll have a representative at the open house. You can have some questions there.
The advisory team and the foundation will have 1 week together.
So as we move into number three, how can we achieve the county council's goals for the Heritage Farm site? We've been talking about increasing public access. One of the things I'm hearing echoed is starting to bring youth in at an early age and engaging maybe the schools or youth in some way throughout their childhood and youth years so that then you have engaged adults who would like to participate here at the farm. Are there other ideas for increasing public access, or does anyone want to kind of grow on the idea of youth still?
Part of it has to do with actually allowing people onto the site. That's a big thing. I mean, you can't get in if you don't have the code. You don't get the code unless you make everybody happy that you ask for it. We could do much, much more. We could work with the schools, and they, I mean, I know they're always catching up, especially after a couple of years of COVID, but even in winter, there are things that have to be done on the farm. Basic things are happening. It just hurts me to know that this is always on the chopping block. It always is. It's a constant thing. And it should not be that way. It should be, you know, what was 81 acres or something when I first started dealing with it. It's like 78.6 now or something like that. But yeah, it's, and the people in Hazeldale Park don't have a clue that at some point we'd really like for them to be able to access it. But if we let them do that, and what does that do? That could mess up this logical access and control point. So, you know, when I see that on the list, I thought, you know, we chewed on that a lot. And it seemed like that probably wasn't the best of the things we want to do. It didn't seem like that was the best, only from a control standpoint.
So destination marketing. Oh, I guess you guys talk.
Yeah, so from the worries about public access and messing things up, from a control standpoint, doing events like seasonal events and charging money for it, would that be a little bit easier? Because we'll have people, you know, instead of just doing continual public access, I think having seasonal events like a fall foliage or, I don't know, what all the harvest celebration, you know, different things like that to try to bring, you know, that'll increase awareness and then also bring people on and also raise money without having the issues.
Did they tell us last time that we couldn't charge for events, but we could charge for parking? Was that?
You can charge for access. So if you have a special event and Bob's Big Burger is putting it on, he's got insurance or they've got insurance that would cover that. So from a recreational immunity, you can't charge for access because then it opens up a lot of litigation. So parking is.
So you could charge for parking.
So the main thing.
But if you had, someone here who wasn't the county, that they could charge a fee for access. So if you had an Oktoberfest Halloween, whatever those activities are, you could have those things. There could be a fee, but it's not the county charging that.
So then the people who put that event on would make that money, could they in turn donate it to Heritage?
Donate, or there's a fee. So, okay. You know,
yeah, there you go.
So like, you know, I put on big soccer tournaments and you have vendors there for food. People want food and beverages. You just charge 20% of your gross receipts or a flat fee. There's a lot of models that way too.
I think one of the things you're going to have to also take into consideration is an evaluation of the logistics of increasing access to this site. Do you have adequate parking? Are you going to have adequate traffic control to the major highway you have sitting right up here on in front of your facility? Those are things you're going to have to look at.
Right, and we do. So 25th Street, there's a light.
Yeah. Yes.
So there is an access on the northeast corner of the property that's managed.
Yeah.
So that would have to be built. It's expensive.
Has an evaluation been done? I mean, or you'll have to do an evaluation if you're.
Of course, we're going to be increasing. Yeah, there'll be a traffic study, but there's a light. This intersection is controlled, so there, it's the county said something there at that intersection, so it's just a matter of timing the lights. A study would help do that, and that'd be in the future.
One of the things they also talked about was using part of the circumference trail as a fitness thing, and the thought was that if you were a runner or somebody who just wanted to have a different place besides around your block to walk, you would pay an annual fee or quarterly or however, but just not weekly or monthly, just get it as tight as you could get it. And then they would have access, and that they're limited number, but you'd get some, like, just more people out here without creating a negative impact on either natural gardeners or the community farmers. Just another thought.
So I hear a lot of concerns and feelings about, or fear about, people accessing behind the fence. What's happened here that I don't know about historically? What has happened out here that's leading to this concern?
People picking crops that aren't theirs. They see a community garden, or they see crops being grown, and they see apples on the tree, and so they help themselves. They get into the research projects and help themselves or do damage to the research projects. Those are, there's been a lot of safety and theft of irrigation pipe and things like that, you know. So
metal,
I think
metal being a lot of metal lately through the years.
So, I mean, you know, you can't control everything, but I think those are some examples that I know of anyway that have been reported. And it's tough to have a research project or have your own community garden that you're growing food for your family. And then somebody comes in and says, well, it's a community garden. That lets me and I can have some of it. Or this is a heritage orchard that we're trying to protect. And yet they help themselves to produce there. So those are just a few of the examples, I think.
Well, maybe we, instead of going for 100% open access, we go to more limited access, like on Tuesdays and Thursdays, that it's open to the public, and there's people here, volunteers, that are kind of like monitoring them, and we don't have it open all the time where we don't have access.
I think there's probably opportunities to have increased access. It's just in controlled events or access, and having an event that's scheduled that people can come to, like a harvest festival or a farm table dinner, or, you know, a harvesting day where they can come to, the farm food bank does it, but you could do that, you know.
And that is kind of, I'm going to say it's elitist, but, you know, not everybody can afford to go into a dinner or go into a farmer's market. They might just want to just walk and learn.
Absolutely.
So you have to have things that are totally free that people can go to.
I like the guided tours, you know, especially it could be very educational, but for free.
I was a docent in an art museum in Nebraska, and we would sometimes have it open and just have a docent place at certain places just to ask questions. And you don't have to have a tour. You're on your own. But when you get to this information board, there's someone saying, you know, if you have questions, let me know. It's not as much as
just a balance, because when you look at the financial sustainability and then you have an access question, there has to be a balance there. So totally understand.
Is there a conservation easement on the property or agricultural easement? Has that been looked into? Because I think what I've heard is some, like, not knowing about the future. What I heard from at least the most recent meeting that the link was sent to us in May, it was very clear that the councilors did not want it to go anywhere. Is that a step that the county would be willing to make to at least preserve it?
You really have to look at that. So I own a farm in North Dakota. You've got a conservation easement. My family hates me. They're probably not giving a Christmas card. There's too many restrictions, and it's forever. Conservation easements don't just go away when a new owner comes on or a new purpose would happen for any part of it. I would think that would require an awful lot of. I know that's your forte, but.
So you can build whatever you want into a conservation easement. So yours was restrictive, perhaps, but it doesn't always have to be, and it wouldn't have to be the whole
80 acres either. You know, let's say the 10 acres in the front are left out of it.
So it is a historic area, and they're attributing assets, buildings to that, and the farm and the historical use of that. So that's probably its biggest protection, really, is that. Doesn't mean that it can't be redeveloped, but it does provide those parameters. There's a process you have to go through to kind of redo it and then go a different direction. So that has not come up that I'm aware of in regards to the conservation easement. I know through our legacy land program, we are working with other farmers, private citizens, on a conservation easement, or taking them to buying their development rights to preserve that farm in the future, some of those, you know, but we haven't looked at it. And for us to use legacy lands property on this would be, we'd have to confirm that we could even do that.
Well, you might not have to. I mean, there's all kinds of
other funding. Right, we can pin it up and stamp it and get it approved and reported, however it is. But that hasn't been something that's come up that I'm aware of in the previous master plans or other process. I know there was the idea of kind of like that was talked about earlier, was having an artist or someone, had a little house out there, and kind of have a little homestead and kind of do that demonstration back in 2010.
And just to be clear, like, for the whole 80 acres, you could set out a little pocket. Like, yep, we want to, we know we don't know what we want to build, but we want to build something here in this little pocket. So we're going to leave this out and leave this pocket out. It doesn't have to be like, nope, that's it. Nothing, can't do anything. Nobody touch anything.
When we build this wetland and enhance it, there will be land use issues that will again impact any development here as well. Again, there's ways to mitigate that. But you know, I think what I'm hearing is that you have to have a destination, something to bring people here, and something to allow them to graze. I'd be here for a little
while. Graze is perfect.
And so, you know, and I think, you know, when I was doing tourism studios for agritourism, cycling, those things, it was always, how do I get someone into my community and keep them just long enough for the next meal? And then hopefully for a bed in the head, but again, it's that next meal. And the same thing here is, how do we get someone to stop and then to stay? You know, is that the trail with some interpretation? Is that a playground out there a quarter mile? So they actually have to walk to a playground and, you know, and it's still controlled. Or what are those sort of ways in regards to how do we, to work? Is it guided? Is there self-guided? Is it a little corner where people have that freedom to do that? You know, how do you build a bird's nest, whatever it may be? I like to do like one of those hand plows, like right on it, you know, and I can still use the soil. But I'm just a big kid.
So lastly, the other goal that the county council set was to improve financial sustainability. And we've touched on that. I've heard, you know, farm table dinners or events where there could be fees associated with the event that could raise funds for the farm. There was also questions about this on the community survey. What are some other thoughts on improving financial sustainability here?
I guess I'm confused about what you can pay or can't pay, but I think of junior achievement. We do send every fifth grader to this town and we pay for it, right? And it's supported by our school board and we have funds to do it. So, I mean, can we create a model similar to that in the county where schools bring third graders out here and do a project-based learning exercise? And I know there's staff involved and that kind of stuff, but I mean, thinking creative, we want those opportunities. We want students to be out of the classroom. We want them to get their hands dirty and learn something and be exposed to this. And then they say, when they're driving by, mom and dad, that's where I went. And then maybe mom and dad will stop. Instead of, I want to go there, I want to see what that is. And they'll know. And maybe they'll draw mom and dad to come in. And another idea I had, and again, I don't know, when you talked about the trail, I don't know how big or how long that is, but I was thinking high school cross country meets, right? And maybe that's not a fee generator. But they can come and they run around and all the families come and at least they're here and they step foot on here and then maybe they're going to be an informational booth about what is this place? I've never been here. It's a way to draw a different group of people in.
Why Racing Events does a lot of like the Apple Tree Marathon and the Girlfriend Triathlon and stuff through the city, and that would be another good, really good venue for them to have a race.
Yeah, why not generate generate funds. So maybe I should have said it half hour ago. Some of those creative ideas where they're looking for spaces to draw folks in.
Yes.
This isn't an idea, just kind of a general mindset that I've had, probably because I'm from the tourism office, but I feel like it's important to create events or regular things like the Tuesday, Thursday thing that are paid for that would attract outsiders, tourists while they're here, something to do so they could pay and then have a lot of free regular programs for the community so that everyone can access it. So that's kind of where my mindset is, like the racing.
How about a poor farm experience? You paid $199 a night to go sleep in that thing that Brad talked about, and you come out here and pull the land and haul the water. People pay weird stuff.
You know? We're going to get our influencers out here to.
A thing in Illinois one time where they had all these different schools, people made their own scarecrows, and they had them in a garden, in a arboretum type of thing. And so you went and you paid your admission, and you would travel through the arboretum looking for these scarecrows. And you people paid to do that.
Yeah.
And the scarecrows are very creative. It's really a lot of fun. Something like that, they're not audible, you know. Everyone goes, one of your traditions at Halloween is to go to the scarecrow walk.
It's just 49.95. You know, even if just as simple as us coming up with an array sheet for the services and the elements associated with the farm practices, simple business practice, so making sure that all of our leases have some of those clauses in there so that if our staff are doing something, there's a reimbursement. Sort of, I call it the Mount Vernon model. So WSU has a Mount Vernon research farm. I'm probably messing up the name, but they have a rate sheet and there's a rental. Those things are standardized, and that's something that I know we've been looking at over the last year and a half that I've been here, trying to get that, those small little baby steps in regards to that fee recovery, as well as I think of like if I'm going to go buy a new house and I see sold on all these lots, and I see some open and I can tell that there's 4 acres here and it's irrigated, I might start applying for that 4 acres. And I think that's something, we have a hidden gem here, but we don't have that like out on our website. We have 23 plots open and kind of that even that promotional from an ag perspective. And I could be wrong if it is out there, and I just don't know where it is, Eric and Sandy. But again, it's just trying to drive that element. I know there's other programs out there who want to do some stuff out there. You know, it's, we have our closet in the front room. You know, we have all of our stuff and equipment kind of out there on that front street thing. So that's kind of it's back to that image. That doesn't generate revenue, but it does in the long run, because it's just a building right now. You drive by, you try not to look.
All right. I said this before, but I'm just going to say that I think in order to measure these things, we have a lot of information about public access and who's on the site and what they're doing. But I feel like we have very little information about what the goal is as far as financial sustainability. And even just combing through all of these documents, I kept writing, like, how much does this place cost? Because it just was so all over the place. And there's so many ideas in all of these materials that are exactly what we've been talking about. Like, all the work has been done. But what I don't feel like has happened, at least not that I was able to see, is it was done most clearly in this most recent one, the Metropolitan one that we read, an actual, like, okay, our goal is, this is what financial sustainability looks like. It means we are bringing in X amount of dollars per whatever month, year, and it is going to this particular suite of bills paid for by this particular organization. Because if we're shooting for $700,000 a year, if we bring in, I've been saying this, because in this one, the July 2020 Heritage Farm Project update, there's this like
potential revenue saving concepts table. And the total of all of them is $87,000. And I read that and I thought, this doesn't include any of the infrastructure or staff time to implement them. This is going to be net zero. But if it's $87,000 and our target is $170,000 a year, okay, maybe that's more reasonable than if our target is $700,000 a year. I still think that a lot of what we're talking about on the grand scale of things, the staff time to implement it is going to equal what's coming in or be even more than it, which is so discouraging to say. Like, I hate myself for saying that because I don't want to be an idea squasher, but also that these are small potatoes ideas and we need something that's either bigger, like a foundation or very wealthy people who are willing to fund it, or the ownership gets transferred to a nonprofit, or, you know, some big picture idea that affects this in a sustainable way, not just like, well, we're charging $100 a year to run or whatever. And I don't mean to pick on whoever said that at all.
So would you say that an outcome of the steering committee and the final report may be evaluating and maybe setting some of those cost recovery levels and looking at that benefit to the community, which, you know, we've demonstrated through a lot of those programs. And that's the way in recreation they do it, is the bigger the community recovery and benefit is, the lower the cost recovery is. So if I'm taking personal yoga lessons, I'm going to pay 150% of probably what the cost is, where if I'm at a park that's just a neighborhood park, there's no cost because of the benefit. And kind of, and that was sort of what was in the metro, and there was some discussions and kind of that that inverted pyramid funding.
And even just like separating out the WSU piece, because I don't know how much it costs to operate a park that's 80 acres with a community center on it. Presumably it would have some cost associated with it.
It's about $35 an acre if it's fully developed.
Okay, so I don't know how that compares to what's here. When you take out what the county is paying to WSU, because that is a different thing that could go somewhere else. So like,
Okay, so we will continue to talk about these subjects and explore them as the steering committee meets. I don't want anyone to feel pressure if you continue to think about these things and noodle them for a while. These topics will continue to come up and we will explore them in different ways. So there will be more opportunities to share and provide feedback.
Can I say just one thing? Sure. I think you're kind of, for it, not necessarily that, I think you're kind of looking for a black or white answer, like this is the dollar amount that you need to figure out how to recover. And if you go back and listen, I don't know if you did the 2020, I think five different council persons spoke and none of them had the same answer and none of them gave a dollar amount. They ranged from nothing because it's got an intrinsic community value to it to dollar for dollar. So there's no direct amount, like direction to recover the entire amount. There's a lot of different opinions. So in my understanding is we're doing our best. You're doing your best to put ideas forward to recover as much or as little cost as benefit to the community.
You know, I'm just saying, what's the not target in terms of we want to pay what X percentage, but just like as it is, as it stands, this is how much the place costs. That way, you know, not necessarily that that's the target, but you at least know how close you've come to whatever financial sustainability is. Not like we have to reach that.
But you absolutely have to have a dollar amount. I mean, it's basic accounting.
$180,000.
I'll just write the check right now, and then we'll just stop meeting and even days.
I need that like your NPR thing where it just comes out every year.
Well, in fact, what I was going to ask Sandy about earlier was why we didn't connect up with Givemore 24, because that makes perfectly good sense, even though now it's pushed to Oregon. But stuff like that, it's basic. People just,
you know, I write a check to Pomeroy Living Farm every single year. And it's a thing, you just do it. And I think that the Heritage Farm needs to be part of everybody's giving budget. It's time to give money, give until it hurts. Isn't that what they say? Yes.
So I want to make sure that everyone has on their calendars the public open house that will be on December 14th. It's from 5 to 7 at the Bud Van Cleve, in the Bud Van Cleve meeting room at Luke Jensen's Toys. So Lindy talked quite a bit about that, but everyone's invited, all the groups, farm partners are invited to table or have an easel and share a little bit about what they do here at the farm. An opportunity to raise awareness about what's going on and to listen to community members. So we want to invite you all and ask you to invite your friends and anybody that you think might be interested in coming. It's a great opportunity to raise awareness about the farm. And then our next steering committee meeting, because we'll have the open house in December, we want you to save the date for Monday, January 30th. So it seems like Mondays are working pretty well for folks, so we'll stick with that. Theme for now, same time, 1 to 3 here in the farm building.
We may have to go to Luke Johnson and go like in that part, so we'll communicate.
Okay, we may change the location, but please save the date.
Yes.
Okay. That sounds great. Are there anything else for the good of the order?
Yeah, there are still treats in the other room for those of you who haven't been.
Please enjoy
and lukewarm coffee.
Thank you all. Thank you all. Thank you.
I have one set of the documents left. If anybody wants, I had an extra set of all the documents.